power of our diplomacy. Diplomacy.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a really big deal.
The strength of our diplomacy.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
I want to play this game so bad.
Deadline.
Hello, loyal listeners, and welcome to episode seven of Diplomacy Cast. It's a big number.
It's a good number.
It means we're done with the seven dreary.
Dreary is such a wrong word for it. They're introductory.
Yes, they're wonderful, and the best of them is today. But let me just read my dang intro. Diplomacy Cast is a podcast about the board game Diplomacy. I'm Eric Mead. I'm not even going to introduce
you. I'm Nathan Barnes.
Say hi to the people.
Hey!
In today's episode, we're going to do a sort of truncated hot-off-the-press segment. We've gotten fewer emails than we have in the past, which is probably mostly my fault.
I blame iTunes.
Yeah, or iTunes. Well, we'll get into it. But I think a lot of people didn't get to hear episode 6 in time to write us all sorts of awesome email, which, you know, these things happen. So we're going to do that, and we're going to look a little bit at our little write-ups in Diplomacy World, because that's cool, and they're off the press as well. And so,
no, keep digging. I like it.
So yay for us. So as mentioned, then we're going to get to the last and also best of the powers, Austria-Hungary, the one we haven't discussed yet in our power play segment.
You think the best?
My favorite.
Mm.
We did your favorite like way back when. I get to do mine now. It's exciting. Right. And then we're going to interview Mr. Andy, quote, Buffalo, unquote, Bartoloni.
Is this person really Andy?
Yeah.
Okay.
You just always call him Buffalo?
No, I knew what it was.
Andy Bartoloni, a very, very active, very, very excellent tournament player. He's been around in the scene for years. We're excited about that. If you have any questions, any feedback, send it to us at press@diplomacycast.com. And subscribe to us on iTunes.
Yeah, because it works now.
Because it totally works now, and I know what went wrong with it. And leave us positive feedback that doesn't include these guys don't know what they're doing on iTunes.
Because we know that.
That would be true. So, this is it.
What's it?
Episode 7.
Oh, yeah.
An auspicious number in Diplomacy World.
In Diplomacy World?
Well, not the magazine Diplomacy World. But
oh, you mean like
the world the of hobby. Diplomacy, oh, this yes, weird exactly. world in which we
don't right. No, you're right. It's cool.
Because it means that we'll be through our 7 introductory episodes, and it's been a lot of fun doing them. I got to tell you, I got a little bit of senioritis about this. I kind of just want to, you know, just coast through the last one and then get onto some new, slightly different, less, you know, formal stuff like we've been doing, but
we can get off the formula.
Yeah, we can do.
We talk to some online people and do stuff that's not as what's the right word? It's not scripted, but it's sort of like really focusing
structured.
On that.
Yeah,
we could just have like concepts and ideas. And,
but you do get to listen to it for one more episode anyway, because we're going to talk about.
Well, who doesn't want to hear about Austria?
About me adoring Austria.
You love an underdog.
I do love an underdog.
Yeah.
It's true. And, well, we'll get to it.
Makes you a good American.
Yeah, it does.
It does.
Let's see. What else? Oh, well, so the iTunes thing. So it turns out that an extra space here and there in your little file that tells iTunes what to download can really just muck up the works in a big old way. So our apologies to everyone. We're back up on iTunes. It seems to be picking new episodes up quite quickly now. So hopefully you're able to use that again as an easier way to get at us.
As not flowing in the conversation at all, as an aside, someone had emailed me about some comment I had made in the turkey episode. Which one was that? 5?
Sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, apparently the impression that was given, and I do recall this because you were very confused when I had said it, I had suggested that it was something you wanted to do was to hold in, not Smyrna, not Constantinople.
Ankara.
To hold there. And that wasn't actually what I was trying to say.
I listened back to that too, and it was sort of weird.
Yeah, it was sort of weird.
I think your point was that you should just do what it takes to make sure that Russia's not in the Black Sea.
Well, right, and And then what it was when I was having a conversation with this individual about it, it really became clear, like, he was a, and he liked to go through Russia, and I have more success going west, which is what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
So anyway, for an, to clear up any confusion out there, I was not suggesting that you should ever hold in 1901 and then car. Don't do that.
It's not the crime, it's the cover up, Nathan.
Don't do that. Don't do that at all. Bad idea. So I've got a little jaunt off into.
Yeah, no, not at all. I'm glad you got that off your chest.
I feel a lot better. Okay, I feel
good,
a lot better.
Good. We're here for you.
I think it is now because we're going to be all about you for the next hour.
That's true. Let's see. So the clamor is at ever increasing levels for more coverage of online type stuff. We are hearing from you, and we are.
It's all in the works.
It's coming.
You know what it's like? It's like they don't think we have a plan.
You've got this puckish grin on your face, like I'm supposed to be following.
We have a plan.
Well, we do have a plan.
Well, we have a broadly sketched plan.
I'm going to re-solicit more feedback on who we should interview. I have a couple good suggestions.
We're brewing
a few ideas.
We've got some people lined up.
But I'd love to hear who you guys out there who mostly play online consider your go-to guys.
Who do we hear from? Because we can freaking get them.
That's right.
This is Diplomacy Cast.
Yeah, we'll talk them into it, one way or the other. Yeah. Oh, see what I did there?
Yeah, no, I get it.
All right, I got nothing else.
It was really funny.
Everything good?
Life good? No, yeah. I mean, my car got stolen, though, than that.
No, it didn't.
You're right.
You just make so that's the way. See, I always know when he's lying.
No, you don't.
Coming up next, hot off the press. Our first email today comes from, well, our first and only email.
Well, yeah. This is the thing. Like when you give people like 2 days.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Send us more, please. Give us new topics of conversation. Give us new directions to go with our just...
You're so freaking needy. It's amazing. Your desperate quest for validation. It makes me happy. I'm
just trying to fill a few minutes of the show.
As a despair vampire. I really love it.
We'll add that to a table talk segment in the future, the despair vampire. Yeah. All right. This comes from Alex Maslow. Maslow, probably. Hey, guys. So my name is Alex Maslow, and I live in Alaska, where playing a face-to-face game of Diplomacy is pretty much impossible. I've yet to find anyone else here who plays the game, and even the folks who work at the local hobby store have hardly heard of it. They don't even sell it. And while now that I live in Alaska, the problem is considerably more extreme, I've always had the bad luck of living in places where face-to-face Diplomacy doesn't seem to work. I learned about Diplomacy from, you guessed it, a history teacher in middle school.
I didn't guess that.
Yeah. And throughout middle school, we played a whole lot of FTF games, and boy, were those unique. I actually got thrown up against a wall by some guy over a stab.
Don't worry, that keeps happening.
But, and then this part of the story is particularly familiar to me, but when we started going to high school, all of a sudden I was the only one who was still interested, and so if I was so lucky to convince my friends to play, we'd get to 1902, and they'd all get bored and leave. And so I got into online play. Now, I'm going to stop here and use this part of the email as a metaphor. Alaska is a metaphorical Alaska here. There are those of you out there in your own little Alaskas, and we understand that. Some of you just, for whatever reason, are you even...
No, I'm just trying not to, go with this. I see where you're going. I like
it. You see where I'm going? So,
yeah, no, it's good.
Point being...
It's only slightly ridiculous.
There are a lot of people out there who probably just live somewhere where, like, their travel radius is too small or their population is too small to really find enough people who are interested in Diplomacy. Mm-hmm. We get that. We really do.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Online seems like a great substitute in that case. Or if not...
And it should be.
It should be. You know, if not substitute, at least, you know, like, way of getting to play a game that you love,
even if
nobody else does. I went through the part where I was the only person that I knew who played the game. I used to beg my friends to play it with me, and eventually they'd get bored in 1902, just like Alex says. And we've all been through that.
Which is why you can't play with your friends.
Yeah, it's true. So I made new friends. Meaner friends.
Friends in quotes.
Yeah. And so I guess my point is, there are a lot of you out there that probably feel like you're in Alaska, but you're really probably not. And we're hoping to encourage some of you to kind of just get out there and give face-to-face a shot. I mean, it's, you know, sometimes with the online people, the people who are really active in it can almost make us feel like it's, I don't want to say like a dying art, but just kind of, you know, why am I going to play face-to-face? I can play online. It really is, I mean, they are both great.
Yeah, they are. No,
And they are both different. And so you know, you should experience both.
You know what's funny? I think the same argument cuts both ways. I think I don't play online mostly because, honestly, I feel like I don't have the time.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure people who play online say the same thing about face-to-face.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's a question of whether you have a solid block of a weekend or if you have an hour or so a day.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing.
For
me, I find it easier to just sort of go, all right, all I'm doing for the next 3 days is playing Diplomacy, and then I'm not going to think about Diplomacy for a while.
Like
instead of playing every day, which I used to do. I mean, I used to play a lot of play by email, but I was just one of those people that it would just suck me in. And you know, if it required me really spending 2 hours on a single press to a single guy to really convince him to do what I wanted him to do, I'd do that. And then I'd go, where'd my day go? And that's, you know, and obviously where do my weekends go? But it's a few weekends a year, and it's more of a social experience when I get out to play tournaments. So that's why, that's just me.
Yeah.
You know, that's my personal preference. But what I guess I just want to encourage everybody out there who's not Alex, who doesn't live in their own metaphorical Alaska, to maybe get out to the game shop and see if you can't round up a few more people, because you might be surprised where you live that, you know, there might be a lot of there might be a lot of people who are just playing online because they figured it would be too hard to get together a face-to-face game.
Sure.
And we hear that story all the time. In different places, all of a sudden a hobby will just pop up in some new city. And
it's so weird. It's always how it happens. It's always like they just like
and
appear.
Yeah, definitely. And I've heard some rumors, and I'd love to hear more about some efforts by a bunch of really active online players to just pull together for a weekend and have a face-to-face tournament.
Yeah,
I don't know much about it, and I'd love it if somebody were to, you know, send us an email or let us know what that was, what happened, how it went, was it fun, you know, what was the adjustment like if you've played the majority of your games online instead of face-to-face? Yeah.
I heard a bit about it.
Did you?
Went. Oh, yeah.
You can tell we prepped this subject.
No, I mean, I didn't hear it from the individuals who participated. I read some reports and whatnot, but I nothing that really sort of...
Nathan and the Grapevine. They're tight.
Yeah, we hang out.
Yeah.
But anyway, Alex, thanks for writing us and letting us know what the heck's going on up there.
Yep. He does go on in the email to tell a story about how he actually now has traveled to a couple of tournaments, which I think is fantastic, even though he's in actual Alaska and not metaphorical Alaska, which means that the barriers to doing so much must be much higher than those of you who are, you know, in the lower 48. So get out there. I know everybody can't afford to just fly all around the country.
Right.
You know, if you can't do that, start one in your hometown. We'll come to it, right? Probably. If we're not too busy with law school or...
How long did I hear that left? I mean, seriously.
Yeah, I'm not too busy with law school.
No, it's good. It's good. And we're belaboring the point, though.
Moving on.
Our next piece of email isn't actually an email at all, but it is in fact a hot off of a press, so I thought maybe we could...
So there's words written on something.
There's words written on something.
Cool.
We're very happy and stoked because we got written up by Diplomacy World, which I'm guessing probably most people who are listening have already found on account of it's been around a lot longer than we have. And
It's been around forever, and it's a great publication. I'm really surprised that they're able to churn out like
four of them
a year,
but they're packed.
Yeah, there's a lot in it. It's dense.
Yeah, every one of them. They've got strategy articles. They cover tournaments. They cover online. They do all kinds of goodies over there. And so, if you're not already subscribing, diplomacyworld.net is your guys. And go read back issues. There's all kinds of good stuff written.
It's amazing.
But they wrote us up, and we just kind of wanted to give them a shout out. They wrote us a couple of cool. Well, Matt Shields wrote us one thing. Thanks, Matt, for letting the world know.
I think he's just plugging himself, really.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, check out the one where they interviewed us, and then there may be some other ones also.
Yeah, but really.
No, he didn't do that. But thank you for writing that. And then Jack McHugh actually wrote like a little review of us, which we thought was pretty cool. He called us, what do you call us? Like the
wacky morning DJs?
The morning zoo of diplomacy, which, man, I got to tell you, I love it. That's my new goal, actually, is to have a wacky drive time radio diplomacy program with like a toilet flush on a button and a big
buzzer to go,
yeah, zany. Like we could take the 12th caller and give them tickets to the Marlins game. And yeah, that's
at least you aim high in life. I love that. You're like, I now know the pinnacle.
I totally want to be a wacky morning DJ, especially since I read that, and a wacky morning diplomacy DJ also. Like we could have diplomacy trivia contests.
Oh, yeah.
You name it.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway,
well, no, and he wrote us a great little, he wrote us up and said some nice things.
Definitely.
The only thing about it I wanted to point out, he does say
point of order.
Well, not really a point of order. I think he was like, well, Nathan, you know, Eric's totally right about the AI, and you know, if you don't think that, you haven't played a lot of AI.
Yeah, well, so what he said was that Eric argued that Austria and Italy should talk to each other first all the time, and I totally agree with Eric on that, but Nathan would like to defend his.
Well, I mean, I think he's right. I mean, I haven't played a lot of AIs for whatever reason. They don't work out so well.
Oh, you mean because you just always attack Austria?
That's not true. That is not true. I have, as Italy, done some amazing, like, over the top things.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty
cool. Just go around Austria.
Yeah.
Before you attack him.
That's
courteous.
Well, it's easier to encircle that way.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, no, you are right. You're perceptive, Jack. I haven't played a lot of AIs because they, just for whatever reason, the other person seems to die. They just sort of disappear.
You sure it's not one more thing you want to get off your chest?
No, I'm
okay.
We'll
just leave it in print that I am the more experienced of the two of us.
You are a lot older than I am. That's true.
Oh,
you have been playing the game a lot longer. I've been in tournaments a lot longer, but you know, whatever.
All right. We'll leave it at that, and we'll call it a short hot off the press.
Yeah. Thanks, guys, for literally writing us up in diplomacy world, and keep those emails coming. It helps us to give you exactly the information you want if you tell us.
Yep.
Okay, our power play segment today.
Power plays.
Power plays.
Power plays.
It's all about Austria.
Yep.
It's Austria. Really Hungary.
The forgotten. Yeah, I don't know why. I think we all know everyone just says Austria.
I thought we were going to zing through this.
Yeah, we're going to.
We can spend 15 minutes on that if we're not careful. Yeah. My favorite country. Part of it's the I love the underdog thing. You're not totally wrong.
No, I know.
But part of it is I think it kind of fits my style a little bit. In that it's sort of an adrenaline junkie country, and okay. you start out fast. You're talking to everybody. You're hearing a lot of different things. You kind of start out with the assumption that everybody wants to kill you, and your job is to talk everybody off of you one by one. And to me, that's fun. I mean, in England, it's always kind of the same. You're kind of like, we'll see what happens. We'll do this. We'll do that. That I don't like playing England.
Like the first 2 years of Austria are fun.
They're
like you're fighting for your life right away.
Drink a cup of coffee right away and just get out there.
I
just talk a mile a minute. Yeah,
I think you know there's when you get Austria, there's a tendency for people to kind of have the like, I got shafted.
Yeah, for sure. When they call out the boards at tournaments, whenever you hear who the Austria is, you go, ooh.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, frankly, it's really...
It's not a death sentence.
It's not a death sentence. And I honestly think that at this point, it's all just habit. We're all just like, oh, no, I got the bad egg. I drew the old maid.
Yeah, it's true.
It's fine. You know, it's not that big of a deal. Like, it dies a little. I think it is get crushed a little bit more often than other countries.
That's the thing about it. The big weakness of Austria is that it can just squish like an overripe melon if people put their minds to it. It's so hard to defend if everybody, you know, we've talked Turkey, we've talked France, we've talked England, we've said, hey, everybody decides you're dead, you've still got a chance. You know, you can make a few good tactical guesses, just hang on. Austria, not so much.
You can make a few good tactical guesses and hang on for an extra year.
Yeah, yeah. We do see Austria's die in 02.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Not
extremely often, but it does happen. We do see plenty of Austria's die in 03. Yeah, whatever. We do see plenty of Austria's die in 03.
Oh, yeah. That's a little more common.
Yeah, we see them wander around the board with one army.
The good ones, Janissary pretty well. I mean, you got to go with it.
Sure.
I have personally been an Austrian pirate, and I had a great time.
Oh, yeah. If you manage to just keep the fleet, it could be fun, yeah. Definitely. But now we're just talking about all the ways Austria dies. Let's talk about the ways to make
it. I'm just saying, like, there's this idea out there, and I think there's a obviously grain of truth to it, but it's really, I think the actual factor is quite small.
Oh yeah, definitely. Now on the flip side, the strengths, you're everywhere. Your central position puts you close to stalemate lines, obviously same as Germany, you know, to a lesser extent, same as Italy. You have, the Balkans are really
right
there. Your playground. If you play right. Yeah, there's everything is so close to, you know, there's four supply centers within, four neutral supply centers within
a year.
Within a year of you, exactly. And dominating them with any sort of form of alliance, it's probably easier for you than anyone else. And so if you can get to that sort of, you know, avoid the initial jump somehow and get to that 6 or 7, you can be a real force.
The trick is just getting through that first couple of years.
Getting through the early game without getting squished like an overripe melon. I think that's
just like, you know, with other countries, if you want to like boil it down to our sort of what you need to do is we've often talked about having a plan. Here, yep. You need like, You got to get to fall 1902, and you got to get to fall 1902
in good shape. Yeah,
and that's your plan, because if you're not going to make that, then you know there's no point in planning in 1905. You know, it's just, there's no point in wasting energy.
Yeah.
Drink that cup of coffee, like you said, and
get out there, get
start talking.
Yeah, convince somebody of something, anyone of anything,
preferably two.
Yeah, exactly, and then pick the one you like better.
Exactly,
and be greedy. You know, for the most part.
Let's go through the neighbors really quick, and then get back to that because I like that as a theme.
Well, all right. I'd say the exception to the be greedy is maybe if you're working with Italy.
Okay.
Early on, and I want to talk about Italy first because the same reason I wanted. They have that adjacent supply center, the home supply center thing, that unique spot on the board where Trieste and Venice are home supply centers and also directly next to each other, which makes relations with Italy a little extra spiky. Yeah. Italy is, it's really hard to just attack Italy out of the gates, and it's almost always suicide to do so. And so you're in this awkward position where Italy can attack you out of the gates if he really feels like it, but you just sort of have to beg him off or sell him something better.
And your one saving grace is that most people play Italy poorly. And tentatively.
Well, and your other saving grace, and something that you should be selling early on is Austria, is, hey, if there's an RT and you join in, then you're dessert.
Right.
And the statistics back that up. But it's still sort of a case worth making if you're not necessarily sure about your Italy.
I'm just saying it's not the most difficult thing to sell to someone. I mean, it's not like selling snow to the people who live in snow.
Yeah, whatever, to Alex from Alaska.
Yeah. Ooh.
Oh,
there you go. See, well, that was very good.
See how I did that?
I was surprised to remember his name.
Yeah.
I was impressed.
So with Italy, I mean, I've said before that the only thing worse than allying with Italy at the beginning of the game is not allying with Italy at the beginning of the game. It's not necessarily fun. It's not necessarily easy, but it can be tremendously effective.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's great for Austria.
If you just say, and especially if Russia's into it too, a lot of what you're trying to do is kind of form hey, let's go take out Turkey in a lot of cases as Austria. If Italy's on board, great. If Russia's on board, way greater still.
Mm-hmm.
If Turkey's on board, that's weird.
Every once in a while, you get one.
What else about Italy? I mean, there's some stuff in terms
really, of... Really, I think you were right. I mean, like, pretty much an Austria is almost always going to try to ally with Italy, because what else are you going to do?
Exactly. At very least, you'll want to persuade his army in Venice...
To do something,
yeah. You like the sort of Lepanto-type openings better. You'd love his army Rome down in Apulia, for the most part, like, planning on convoying down, because there's fun stuff that the two of you can do together. And so, you know, feel him out, see if he's open to that.
He might be open to that Key Lepanto.
Or the Key Lepanto, which we'll save, but it's a special little, you know, little something that you can try with just the right Italy at just the right time. It probably comes up a lot. In early negotiations, at least in the tournament world, it does. Yeah. Somebody always suggested it, even if they're joking. But and then a lot of time, you know, when I'm Austria, if the Italian says, "Hey, I'm thinking about doing the thing where I go down to Apulia to set up the Lepanto, but then I've got this extra army, Venice. Do you care if it goes to Tyrolia?" I'll do that a lot.
Sure.
With the right guy. You know, if he splits it, as long as he's not going Venice and Tyrolia, that's just bad for me, for the most part. The little floater up there, I realize that it still can just, you know,
sure, but
hurt me in the fall. But,
you know, you're better off pushing it somewhere.
Well, sure. My favorite is Piedmont, obviously, because then it just goes away. You know, then it just goes to a place where it cannot hurt me at all. But you don't get it very often. No. And there's still going to end up most of the time being at least one Italian army bordering something of yours. And we'll talk more about what you do if you think that's coming when we get to openings. But for now, move on. You want to do Russia next? Or
yeah, Russia.
Okay, Russia. So, Russia,
there's Galicia.
Yeah, there's the Galicia.
Galicia and to some extent Romania.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Those are the big talks.
Galicia is usually the first thing that you guys talk about. You can say, hey, let's bounce in Galicia.
You should never be saying
it. Well, okay.
The Russian typically comes to you and says that.
I disagree. Absolutely no. The Russians, if Russia doesn't choose to cover Galicia and an Austrian ends up there, it's not a crippling blow.
No, it's not.
If an Austrian chooses not to go there and a Russian does, it's pretty bad for Austria.
It's not that bad. If someone else
decides. It takes away all your flexibility in the fall. So I think it's more important to the Austrian than it is to the Russian that Galicia remains empty. And if that means you have to bounce, then you have to bounce.
I'm just saying you don't go suggesting it. How many times have you suggested
it? I will suggest it to someone. Almost never as Russia. As Russia, I'll usually say, let's not do that. As Austria, I'll have to kind of wait and feel the guy out. First, I'll have to say, if he says, I don't want any trouble in Galicia, and for whatever reason, I feel like he's selling me something, I'm going to Galicia.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm pointing out that I have a number of times suggested there'll be a bounce in Galicia, and that the Russian hadn't thought about it, but then once it was suggested,
oh, sure.
Could not.
That's true.
Get it out of his head. That's so true. I'm just saying, I don't like go like the first thing I say to Russia. Okay, we're bouncing.
No, me. Either.
That's. I mean, like,
I mean, unless it's you.
That's just not fair.
Yeah. No, not really. I mean, certain circumstances. Just if I get a bad read.
Sure.
If I hear a rumor from somebody that's I'm his target. You know, something like that.
I'm just saying, if you go to someone and you say something, that you have a potential that it's going to get in their head and they're going to do it. They're going to alter their plans. It's not even that great for Russia, as you just pointed out. Russia should probably be going to Ukraine. It's increased. There's much more flexibility there.
That's true.
And frankly, bouncing your units in Galicia is a waste of everybody's time.
I agree with you. And remember here, I'm the AR guy. I'm the guy that actually loves AR guy. I'm the guy that actually loves that alliance. And one of the things I love most about it is if you just decide pre-spring 1901 that this guy's going to be your buddy and you really think that that's what's happening, you don't have to go to Galicia, which means that you have that army to do all kinds of other better stuff with. Way better stuff. But I'm just saying...
If you gotta go, you gotta go.
And I'm not afraid to ask for it as Austria if I get a bad feeling about it.
I think that's fine. Yeah. If you got a bad feeling,
Okay. What else about Russia?
Well, there's the hedgehog sort of opening thing you had to deal with Romania. Like, it doesn't come up that much. But
that's not the hedgehog. That's the roadhog. Something like that. Where you open straight to Romania.
Well, I could be wrong with what it's called. I thought it was Galatia,
there's
Romania,
different hedgehogs.
And Venice. You kind of just go.
There's different hedgehogs. You're right. That is a hedgehog.
Okay.
But anything where Budapest goes to Romania, Budapest almost always goes to Serbia.
Yeah.
Austrians. Because
it's free?
Because you can. Once you get there, it becomes pretty difficult to lose it, and you're going to want to build something. Serbia seems handy.
Yeah.
So most Austrian openings end up with somebody in Serbia, but the occasional ballsy Austrian will go straight Budapest to Romania, which is an interesting move. First of all, if it bounces,
especially if you've relied on it going there, and then you've moved to Budapest, and you have this, then you're back to like square freaking one.
Time I'll do it, I guess, is if Russia and Turkey both tell me, "Yeah, we're bouncing in the Black Sea," and I have no reason to doubt that. I mean, if it just seems right that they're doing it, sometimes just to be.
There could be an occasion in which you really want to cripple the Russian for a variety of other reasons.
Yeah, that's true. It is a nasty anti-Russian move, and Russians, honestly, they're so used to Budapest going to Serbia that they almost never even consider that Budapest can go to Romania, and they go, what am I going to do to get Romania in the fall?
Which is why typically you go to Ukraine. And if your Russian is going to Galicia and you pop him in Romania, then he's kind of screwed.
Yeah.
But actually, so were you. So you didn't really win anything there.
Yeah, it's not a common one, but it's I suppose
it's something to think about.
Anti-Russian as you can get. Although more on that later.
Let's. So Turkey.
Well, yeah. I mean, prospects for working with Russia. Just before we go to Turkey, if you're going to be trying to work with Russia, it's because you're targeting Turkey early, obviously.
Probably.
Yeah. You and he and some
are
going to shove each other down into Turkish things. Ideally, Italy's on board for this, because if Italy's attacking you while you're trying to kill Turkey, Russia's going to get huge. So most of the time, if your target is Turkey, you want to have both of them on board.
Yeah.
I'd say for Austria, most of the time, if that early three-way breaks down into somebody getting stabbed later in the game, one of the three getting stabbed, and it reverses pretty often. Also, you know, you can be anti-Russian for a year and then flip around and it'd be pro-Russian or vice versa.
Yeah.
Anyway, point being, I'd say most of the time you're attacking Turkey, with Russian help.
Well,
and ideally Italian help. And if you don't have one of those, Turkey becomes slightly less of an appealing target.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to do that by yourself.
Yeah.
It's silly.
You're better
off going to Austria.
Or even if you only have one, but not Russia. The other of them. If you're in the face of an RT, and this bears stating, if there's an RT, and it's a clear RT, and it's they've made up their minds early on, then you're hopefully working with Italy, and you're going to have a two-on-two, and you don't really have much choice in the matter. It's that or Italy's on board, too, and you're set.
Yeah.
But, leaving that aside for the minute, because every once in a while, you know, some days you're the windshield, some days you're the bug, and the days you're the bug, it's when all three of them just decide to kill you, because there's nothing you can do when that happens. But it doesn't happen to me very often as a sort of an Austria enthusiast.
No, because it doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Yeah, exactly. You can usually convince somebody that they're going to not get any of it if they continue on. And you can usually peel somebody off if you're doing your job. But if it's a 2-on-2, train of thought, whatever. I'm doing all the talking here, buddy.
No, I don't know where you're going.
Get your head in the game.
If a two-on-two
is the best you can do, a 2-on-2 is the best you can do, I guess is my point. If there's an RT, then you have to respond to it. And the correct response is an AI combined with freaking out and screaming at the rest of the board about there being an RT and hopefully getting some help from someone. England and Germany especially. But the other thing that can happen if none of that is in play, none of what we've talked about so far is in play, is you can work with Turkey.
You can work with Turkey.
And I think we
awkwardly.
said awkwardly, sure. And I think we said in the Turkey episode that it's, you know, while awkward in the medium term,
it can eventually get pretty good.
In the shortest term, I think it has, especially if you have sort of a distracted Italy, I think that the AT has the most fast growth potential of the alliances for Austria. Of all of his neighbors, if he were to pick one to work with that could just grind it up and get both powers a lot of builds really fast, I think it's those two.
Yeah, no, because the other two are they have sort of these pinch points that you have to fight your way through.
Right. And you and Turkey working together just go, you know, Romania, Sevastopol, Warsaw, Moscow pretty fast, and then, you know, maybe toss Venice, Naples in there, like, on the other end, mm-hmm. if things are going well. And so it is definitely something to consider. Now, the experienced Austrian players know that, hey, all right, I'm the one who gets stabbed in this. You know, yeah. Let's say we have a good AT. I'm usually, like, at the end of that, you know, when it sort of settles itself out, I'm going to be the one that's, like, sort of bared and exposed, and he's going to be the one that's nice and safe and right all the way behind me, and he can just do me next. And that's true. And so if you're going to work with the Turk, it's sort of one of those playing with fire things. It's one of those.
That's kind of the problem. And especially since, your biggest defense to that is the Austrian runs up to the line because you have to get onto that stalemate line. There's all that space back there. If Turkey does run in on you, he pretty much guarantees that he's not winning the game.
Right.
Because he gets caught.
Right.
There's just no time to get to across the line. He's stuck.
That's
so true. Unfortunately, I think ATs are not they're not the way that one person's actually going to win the game. They're pretty good for a sizable draw.
That's true. That's true. I mean, you know, nothing's great for Turkey as far as winning the game.
True, but you've really put it up in a place where someone's way up on the line and the person you're attacking, you are slowly removing pieces from the line.
Yeah, sure, sure. But if you can do a good Austria and maybe get ahead a little bit, a good AT, and maybe get a little ahead a little bit as Austria, then you can just, you know, if you get the right stab on Turkey time,
sure.
You've got, you know, that's a way to win the game. Right there.
Yeah.
You know, if you guys have made nice, tidy work of Russia and nice, tidy work of Italy, and then you have that turn where maybe you're building and he's not kind of thing, you can just turn around, crunch him, and get pretty big pretty fast doing
that. No, I agree with that, but I think our analysis of it being Austria, the one that gets stabbed.
We're trying to do the Austria-centric. We talked about this, you know, in terms of AT from T's standpoint. From T's standpoint, it's all gravy. All he has to do is just sort of, you know, ride it out and then stab when the time is right. From Austria's standpoint, you've got to stay big. You're playing with fire. You stay big, stay ahead, know your guy, you know, that you're working with. I like the alliance. It can be weird. So there you go. There's the East. The three neighbors, three possible alliances, all of which can work for Austria. Another thing I like about Austria,
there. So then there's
the West. Yeah,
Germany, which is something you always say about Austria and Germany.
Yeah, they should be friends. They should pretend that they have no borders at least for a couple of years,
because it doesn't matter.
In practice, you'll find that almost every Germany will do that for you as Austria. In fact, you should, as Austria, even sort of be encouraging Germany to be advocating for you a little bit. Some Germans will be up for it. I'm up for it when I'm Germany a lot of times, because it's just good for both of you. Like, you need to have a Russia policy between you, for one thing. You need to sort of be coordinated on how you're going to deal with Russia, like whether we want a good Russia or a bad Russia, and if we want a good Russia.
And you want to know when Germany's going to go in on Russia.
Yes,
you want
to have because a good idea. You can help and you can gain from that. Skipping ahead a little bit to the mid game, once the German has actually started to head toward Russia, that can be great for you if you decide to join in. I mean, let's say you've been working with Russia for a while, and then all of a sudden Germany comes after him. That's your time to go, hey, let's get in on that action. And then, you know, goes your ex-ally pretty quickly.
No, absolutely. But I think the rule is, as Germany goes, Austria goes, and vice versa, especially in the early game. Central powers, you want to stick together.
He can also help in mediating things with Italy, if things get a little tense with Italy, because he doesn't particularly want you guys fighting partially because it's just in sort of like a long-term board way, it's bad if it happens too early, and partially because he doesn't want a bunch of pieces mucking about in Terulia and Bohemia, yeah. which they will yeah, in one of those boards.
Have to.
Because then there's always the chance that you guys, Austria and Italy, can just decide, let's just get along. And then, oh, hey, look, Munich's right over there.
Delicious.
Yeah, never mind. Just kidding about the fight. So he'd love to just see the German will be motivated by wanting to just see Terulia and Bohemia and, you know, even Silesia, although that's less your problem.
Right.
Empty for as long as they can possibly stay empty. And so if you have an Italian who's thinking, maybe I'm going after the Austrians, sometimes the German can help / put pressure. I've even had Germans send a piece down to Terulia pretty early just to sort of keep the peace.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just to say, hey, quit screwing around. Are you guys cool? Are you going to get along? In which case, I'm just going to slide right down to Piedmont and go attack the French guy or something, which is, you know, fine. But cultivate that relationship.
Yeah.
He should be willing to tell you things like whether he's planning on bouncing the Russian out of Sweden and have you keep that in confidence. So on and so forth. Germans should be your best friend
in the game. That's just the way it is.
Whether you attack him later is another story.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking
probably have to win.
Right. And, and just, you know, theme.
Yeah.
You're thinking of fall 1902. That's your thought.
Yep.
For that time period, Germany is your best friend.
Yep. Yep. France and England.
Not so much. I mean, you're going
to talk to them a ton in a face to face game.
Well, especially in that first 2 years because you have bigger problems. But if you do have a moment at the board, you want to talk to either one of them about either Italy or Russia.
Yeah.
In England's case, you want to kind of know what the English policy is towards the Russian. Mm-hmm. It'll tell you a couple of things. If you can get information out of England because he might be willing to talk to you because you're so far away, you'll get a good read on whether or not you can expect an RT, whether or not there's going to be a shift in Russian forces north to attack England, or whether England is just for whatever reason going to do something crazy like, you know, try and get St. Petersburg
early.
So those are good things to know. On the France side, you want to know how the negotiations are going between France and Italy.
Definitely. That's the one thing you talk about, and you talk about it a lot. You gossip back and forth. Oh, he said he told me he's coming after you. He told me he's coming after you. That's like the worst conversation to have is France, because, oh, God, who's he lying to?
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
He's usually lying to you, the Austrian.
He's usually the liar.
If he tells you that he's going to go after France, and he tells France he's going to go after you, he's probably going after you. Rule of thumb right there.
Pretty much. But you really do want to know how that's going because, as we talked about in both the Italian and French episodes, both those countries are trying in those critical 2 years. They really just mostly want, well, France at least, wants to kind of like DMZ everything.
Mm-hmm.
The Italian might have different ideas, but a lot of the time, at least 50%, if not more, the Italian probably wants to DMZ. He's probably got Turkey or Austria or something else that he wants to focus on. So you need to know how that's going.
Yeah. Yeah.
And try to muck it up.
And the corollary to what I said before, I guess, and to what you're saying as well, is if you go to France and France says, he told me he kind of wants to go after Turkey, and he told you the same thing, he actually probably does want to go after Turkey, which is a huge piece of information early on.
You want to know.
Yeah. So France can definitely come in handy for that early on in the game.
Yeah, this goes back to what we were talking about at the very beginning. You're going to be talking a lot, and you're going to be talking very fast in these first 2 years.
Yeah.
You're going to probably need to talk to everyone. Obviously, you're focusing on people that are a bit closer, but don't ever...
No, those, agree.
Like, you want to, like,
valuable intelligence
pull
out
every there. Single yep. minute, day, email, whatever yep. you can out of it
yep.
to get as much information as possible in those first four seasons.
Yep, absolutely. So I think that's sort of the round the board... Seven powers part of it.
Let's talk about some openings.
Yeah, there's some specific stuff on openings that I wanted to hit because Austria, I don't know, maybe it's just because I like them more and I'm more interested, but I think they have some really interesting openings decisions, and it's sort of, to me, it's kind of a flowchart, I guess. There's kind of a if this, then this kind of thing that at least seems clearer to me when I'm playing Austria. For example, start with the Galicia thing that we talked about earlier. Okay. If I feel funny about Russia, then I'm going to Galicia, right?
Sure.
If not, then Vienna has some other options. let's go Budapest first before we get too far into that, because Budapest, the flow chart is you're going to Serbia, right? And then if the answer's no, no, but you're going to Serbia, right? And then if the answer's no, no, seriously, dude, you're going to Serbia. And then if the answer's still no, then maybe you're going somewhere else from Budapest.
Like, you're probably, you like 80% of the time, you should be going to Budapest.
It's to Serbia.
That's what I said.
Yeah. Budapest just, to Serbia. The other, I mean, rational destination for it, I suppose, is Romania. But again, it would have to be just right.
Yeah, or you've got some big problems.
Or, I mean, I suppose maybe...
You could be going to Trieste. You
could be going to Trieste to do an all-out anti-Italy attack, mm-hmm. which you should never do.
You could what, be, you think Tyrolia, Trieste, and the Adriatic isn't a power move?
You could be supporting yourself into Galicia, which is...
I've done it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a possibility. Okay, why are you doing that? Support yourself into Galicia.
Because you're really angry, honestly.
Because you trust the Italian completely mm-hmm. would need to be number one. Number two would be either you just hate the Russian, and it, like, you're perfectly happy building one or less, which is probably all you're going to build with that move. But... you just want maximum position on the Russian, and or you know that he's doing some terrible opening that you can exploit.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even matter that you're not bothering to take Serbia right away. I suppose those would be the reasons you could do.
Yeah, other stuff. It happens. Really, I have done it before.
I didn't
think it was the best thing ever, but I have seen it done. I have done it.
It takes away so much because it takes away your ability to move. I mean, it takes away your almost guaranteed Serbia for one thing, which also kind of takes away your ability to support something into Greece, which means it takes away your guaranteed Greece. When you're Austria, I guess the ideal most of the time is you're going to go to Serbia and then you're going to use Serbia to support yourself into Greece, right? The fleet that's walked down from Trieste. There's two builds right there. If you've managed to talk everybody into leaving you alone and they actually do leave you alone, you're solid. I mean, at least as solid as Austria can be at that point. You get your two, you know, with an off chance of three, depending on craziness that happened with Vienna, but it's rare. That's what you're hoping for. So I guess with the flowchart, I start with, I want to make sure I get Serbia and Greece and no one attacks me. My best moves to do this, I would go...
you would go Serbia.
I would go Budapest to Serbia. I would go Trieste to Albania. And then Vienna...
is either going to go to Trieste or it's going to Galicia, depending how weird you feel.
Yeah. I'd say the most common is that it ends up going to Galicia and just bouncing there.
Yeah.
If you don't feel like you have to go to Galicia... then that opens up a lot of other things. For one thing, you don't have to just blindly trust the Italian to not move to Trieste. You can cover Trieste at that point. Or you could even, you know, if you think he's going to do the two north, you can even go to Tyrolia and just sort of shut him down, which is really fun. There's a couple of ways to defend against it. I've done that before, and it's glorious. if Italy is opening Rome to Venice, Venice to Tyrolia, and you just go... sit down.
It is kind of fun.
Yeah, it's super cool.
Sorry.
So,
did you want to play 1901 over again?
Yeah, exactly.
Did you want to play?
No,
Spain?
No, do over.
No,
so, okay.
Do over.
So there's that. Yeah. That's one thing you can do with it. My favorite is that in that part in the flowchart where I'm like, I'm really not afraid of Italy, and I'm really not afraid of Russia. Both of these guys say they're going to leave me alone, and I believe them both. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go Vienna to Budapest at that point, because now you've got Serbia and Budapest. You've got two on Romania, which can do all kinds of stuff. You've got, you know, and assuming you've got a fairly defensible position in case somebody didn't do something that they said. Like, if Russia goes to Galicia at that point, well, you've still got guesses to cover everything.
Well, you're building too. So,
and assuming you keep your two, then you're,
oh,
you
know,
the main benefit of it is that it puts two armies in Serbia and Budapest next to each other, which gives you all kinds of fun in the fall. You know, you can talk to.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You all right.
Yeah.
Because for whatever reason, you're not going to use Serbia to support the Greece move.
Right. Exactly. So if it's just an all out anti-Russia, you decide, then you don't really need to support that because
somehow I've convinced something with Turkey where you slide into that and you slide into Greece and you're supporting Turkey up, which is kind of nice.
You support them up. You have two supports to support him up, which means you don't have to worry about Greece because the only thing that could bounce you out of Greece is
taking your support into Romania.
Taking your support into Romania. I mean, I suppose if the Italians are in the Ionian, they could do it, but then they're not building at that point. So
yeah, they usually don't like that.
They don't do that ever. Well, in practice,
they do sometimes. Sometimes they take a supported convoy into Greece.
you also have the option of just letting the Italian, like if you actually think you can just get Romania for yourself, you can also just let the Italian into Greece, which is also super sick awesome, because now you've got an AI that's actually like so well developed that worrying about there being an RT doesn't become so much of a worry anymore, because now
he's a step away from the Aegean. So
exactly, you've got an Italian in Greece, you've got yourself in Serbia and Romania. Ooh, that's pretty good.
No, it's awesome.
Yeah,
I love doing that.
So
when I'm Italy,
I love doing it when I'm Austria, man. I love being able to do something sort of like ambitious and forward as an AI without having to give up one of my home centers to the Italian in order to make it go. So those are my Vienna thoughts. I mean, anything else?
No.
Vienna to Galicia, Vienna to Trieste, Vienna.
There are some other things. Just don't go north.
Don't go to Bohemia. I mean,
don't do it.
Yeah.
You really don't go to Tyrolia unless you've got like some real solid plan, like you're bouncing the Italian or something.
Yeah. I'd say I've done it once or twice, Vienna to Tyrolia, and it's only because I had it on real good authority that Italy was doing exactly that move that I wanted to spoil.
Sure, but other than that, I mean, there's really nothing. There's no plan there. You're marooning an army there. If you accidentally. It's silly.
The one that we haven't talked about yet is the fleet, though.
Yeah.
Now, the fleet in all of my ideal dream Austria scenarios there goes to Albania first, right? But there's other things that it can do, and some of them are at least kind of valid. The Adriatic, I'm not usually crazy about. There's a gambit that involves it that with Italy that we've talked about, and it's
blue water.
Meh.
You don't really have to.
There's the all-out Italy attack.
But you can do that by going to Albania. You don't need to go to the Adriatic.
That's true. There's the all-out Italy attack, where, of course, you go Vienna to Tyrolia, Budapest to Trieste, and Trieste to the Adriatic.
And then you give up all your home centers.
Yeah, it gets you Venice and loses you Budapest and Vienna. and just leaves aside all claim on the Balkans. Yeah, Balkans, Schmalkans.
Yeah,
you know. That's bad. I mean, I guess there could theoretically be a reason you'd do it, and that's how you'd do it if you did it. Although, I guess you could go Budapest to Serbia and then those other two. And
then what, have him defend Venice?
It's terrible. You need three. I'm trying to... The other main thing that you can do with that fleet, if you're not so interested in Greece, if you feel like you're getting a bad start, and this is something I see more online, I used to see more online than I ever do in tournaments, but I think maybe it's something that should be used more at tournaments. It's some variation on the hedgehog openings where
you just take a poke at Venice.
You're not taking a poke at Venice because you're expecting to win it. And even if you do, you'll probably get booted back out in the fall. You're taking a poke at Venice because it scuttles, if he does move too north, scuttles that. It leaves one of them in Rome. And if he moves directly into Trieste, well, it bounces that also, right? It sort of blunts any possible attack he could make if you just sort of leave the Italy conversation saying, I didn't really like how that went.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best thing that you can do to just defend yourself. The second best thing that you can do is just cover Trieste with Vienna. But the hedgehog openings assume that you're using Vienna to go to Galicia. They call them hedgehog openings because you're like some spiky little creature that's just lashing out at everything around him.
Which happens sometimes. It does actually work.
If you think Russia's against you, if you think Italy's against you, you should go to Trieste and Galicia.
Yeah.
That's the best way to just sort of like, because that just, then in the fall, you're like, all right, there, I screwed up my whole game. I'm not getting Greece. I'm getting one max, but to heck with you guys. You're not, yeah. You know.
That, it does sort of I mean, no one got the jump on anybody, and it sort of, you know.
Yeah, it just takes all the momentum. Yeah, exactly. It restarts the negotiations. Then in the fall, you can say, well, you're probably not getting that. Well, you guys probably aren't getting that. You want to do something else?
Yeah.
And look, I know I'm not building two this time, but that's fine. You know, building two as Austria is a luxury. It happens
a decent amount.
And no one's ever scared by it if it does happen. In fact, probably no one's scared if you build three most of the time, but you never build three.
I've done it, but you rare.
Walk into
and then you usually see, and you usually just
lose one. Exactly.
It's cocky for no reason,
right? And actually, pretty hard to do.
Yeah,
all things considered.
Usually happens with Romania. It's usually how it ends up.
Yeah, Romania or Venice. I mean, those are the only real candidates. Well, I guess Bull.
Bull would be sweet. Bull's hard, though.
Yeah, the Russian will have had to open to Romania and then be able to support you in.
Which is impossible.
Sure. It's possible.
Oh, you mean support in with the same with just
Bulgaria. You go Serbia to Bulgaria, and then...
Sorry, I thought you were saying Budapest to Serbia. And be in Bulgaria.
Yet another good thing about that... the Vienna to Budapest opening is that it leaves that option open. Not that it ever happens, but it leaves it open. That's kind of cool. I know.
Now
I'm in Austria fantasy zone here. It's not something that ever happened. I mean, maybe it can happen in a game where, you know, you're playing with some new players something like that. You can talk somebody into something they don't know that they shouldn't do.
But I think with the real reason to do it is... No matter whether or not you know that if you're playing against competent players, that reality will never manifest, there's no reason to not position yourself in the best possible way.
Definitely.
You should always be working for the off chance that somebody makes a slip. So always be making your best moves, even though you know statistically or there's just almost no chance you're going to be there.
Yeah.
Always be positioning yourself
to
take full advantage of the situation if you can do it.
Definitely.
I mean, that's just... Always assume that the person you're playing against is at least as good as you are at it.
Yep.
Even if you know they're bad.
I agree.
Always do it. You never know when someone else is writing somebody's orders.
That's also true. All right. So I guess just to recap it real quick, go back to my little flowchart. I would write my optimal moves as Vienna to Budapest, Budapest to Serbia, Trieste to Albania. Those would be my very favorite opening as Austria almost all the time.
Right.
Then I'm going to kind of work backwards from there. Don't trust Russia all the way. Okay, we'll change that Vienna to Galicia. Don't trust Italy all the way. Okay, we'll change that Vienna to but do trust Russia. Okay, we'll change that to Trieste. Don't trust Italy a lick and kind of think Russia's after you too. All right, we'll change Trieste to Venice. We'll change it to Trieste to Venice and Vienna to Galicia. Budapest, we're still leaving it Serbia and only changing that if we've gone a couple of sort of scattered flowcharts to the right and we find out, okay, Russia and Turkey are definitely bouncing in the Black Sea. We think that they're probably going to have a war with each other and they both want me on board. Well, then I'll just be greedy.
Yeah.
And I'll just go that way. In which case... I'm also going Vienna to Budapest because then I have something available to at least move on Serbia in the fall. What else? Openings. Oh, the Kielopanto, we said we'd mention it.
Yum, 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 yum. So what you can do, and I'm sure everyone out there has Googled it and you know how to do this, but something that comes up every time, the Italian will go to the Austrian and say, hey, here's an idea. Mm-hmm. What if... As I take my Venetian army and I march it into Trieste, and then you can either A, dislodge it, or B, help me into Serbia.
Yep. The best way to do it is, well, actually, he just sort of follows out through Serbia. I guess you could
eject him if you
wanted. You'd go Budapest to Serbia, Vienna to Budapest. Actually, you'd do my favorite opening.
Yeah.
Only the problem with it would be that there would be an Italian opening in Trieste at the end of it.
Yeah.
Which is fine because you arrange this and assuming that you absolutely trust the guy, you know, if you don't, he can just ruin you. if you trust him and you shouldn't have, he can absolutely ruin you. If he just goes, ha ha ha, you just let me walk into Trieste because you thought we were going to do something. Now I'm just going to get you. Usually that works. Usually he gets you at that point. So it's absolutely a gambit. It's absolutely one of those things where gotta have the guy. But if you have the guy and you want to do it, then the follow-up to it is then Albania
goes to Greece.
No, Albania supports Serbia down to Greece.
So what, in 02?
Oh, well, you can do it either way.
Okay.
Well, you have to leave Serbia somehow. So that Trieste can go to Serbia.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. So
gotcha. You're talking about the Austrian army Serbia.
The Austrian army.
Already putting the Italian.
You're
in
always
Serbia.
Italy in your head.
Sorry.
So then what you do, the Austrian has Albania support Serbia to Greece, and then Budapest supports Italian Trieste to Serbia. And if that was, you know, look at a board if you're not exactly sure what we're talking about. So he walks right through Trieste, goes into Serbia. You get Greece, you build one. He gets Serbia and presumably Tunis and builds two, or else if he's really awesome and on board, he says, I'll come back for Tunis, move straight to the Aegean because he knows he's getting the one for Serbia, and he builds this one anyway. Then, wow, that's a lot of forward position. Now you've got
Greece, Serbia, Aegean.
Yeah, your alliance has Greece, Serbia, Aegean, and Budapest.
To cut support.
And you're building Vienna. So that, I mean, most of the time you're building Vienna. And so that just builds this giant AI.
Yeah, if you think there's an RT, this is kind of what you do. Because you're just right up in their grill.
You're
like, oh, hi, were you going to try and do that? Because you're screwed.
That I think about it a lot when I'm Austria. I don't do it a ton if I have the right.
You have to know that there's the RT there. I mean, otherwise.
You have to know there's an RT. And even then, there's other things you can do. The thing we talked about with putting Italy in Greece is another option. But this is tactically best.
And and you have this, there's a huge benefit to you know, if you can convince people that you're fake, that the war is a war and that you got stabbed.
Like,
there's a huge amount of advantage.
Also
now,
true. Most people are wise to it.
A lot of people are wise to this one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty hard to sell.
The only way to sell it really is if he actually sends a second army right after it. You know, if he goes Rome to Venice, Venice to Trieste, that's pretty convincing.
Yeah.
At that point. And if that was just fake all along, wow. You've got the board well and truly fooled. Yeah. The other best time to, you know, or else just don't even bother pretending you got stabbed. The only reason it's worth pretending you got stabbed is if you really are playing with a Russia and a Turkey who don't know what a Kilopanto is.
Yeah, which
then you can go, my God, you monster, you've moved into Trieste, you fool, and then sneak off with him and go, ha ha ha, we've really got them going, now you move to Serbia, and they're going to go, what happened? But
most typically, they know what's happening.
Typically, they know, and you just do it anyway. You got to be a little bit careful, because there's actually things they can do to totally ruin it. Like, if they're positioned right.
Yeah, if you're not in Budapest.
Yeah.
And
if you don't have the support out, then the Turk will just spitefully bounce you back into Trieste, or bounce the Italian back into Trieste, and that's very bad for an Austrian. So, don't let that happen.
Yeah.
We've said a lot about openings.
Yeah, we're done. We're done with openings, and I think
early game.
Well, the early game is, you know, 0-2, four seasons. So that's how you're thinking.
Killed. You know, if you are getting attacked, you know, it's not necessarily a death sentence. We talk as if it is. But if you get attacked in spring 01 by everybody, for example, and you didn't open right to defend yourself, nobody's taken any of your home centers yet. Almost definitely.
Yeah, don't roll over.
Don't roll over. Follow one, you can reverse things. You can change people's minds. You can come up with, you know, hey, that Russian in Galicia that you didn't expect to be there, you can just support him down into Romania.
Yep.
You know?
Where he wanted to go anyway.
Or go, hey, I'm going to throw everything into attacking Romania, so you'd probably better use that as a support.
And it might be dumb to say, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Nope.
You know, if you don't give people options, and you don't go out there and say, hey, this is what we should do, here's the plan.
Yeah.
And you just kind of mope about, they're just going to kill you.
Yeah.
So go out there and present the plans. And it seems
silly. A lot of Austrians do that. They have a bad start and they go, I'm done. Now,
don't
if
do
you've
that.
Had two seasons of a bad start, then it probably is all over.
It probably is a little over, but still, you know.
Even so, you're mostly, I mean, I'd say most of the time you're playing for fun. Look, I've had Austrias that have come back from the dead.
Yeah.
I absolutely have. I've had Austrias that haven't built an 01 and have gone on to great things. It can happen. It just, it even kicks the adrenaline up into another high gear if you have those bad starts. And you just have to start running around to everyone and saying, look, I'll do anything. Let's just throw you. You can have all that. You can just turn around and stab turkey. I'll support you there. And just try it again and again and again. And then 2-3 seasons in, if nobody's listened to you, okay, you're the bug, not the windshield that day. This happens as Austria. And it's not like you can outmaneuver anyone. But don't, for the love of God, don't play defense.
Yeah.
That's the main thing.
Because you will fail. You're going to lose.
Just Budapest supports Vienna. Vienna supports Budapest. Die. No chance. That those orders are not going to do it. If you're down to Vienna and Budapest, move them both, or have them both write support orders for somebody else.
And sell a plan, and do your best to sell it, and then go with the plan, even if you think it's only a 50-50 chance, because you're going to lose anyway. Definitely. So, you know, just get out there and try, because sometimes it works.
Yeah, may as well take 50-50. Yeah. Austrias can come back, but just keep it going, you know? Don't give up.
So I don't know.
Into the mid game a little bit. I
don't know if there's much to say about it.
Yeah, it's true. Since it's the last of the countries, and we're having a little bit of senioritis here, we've already kind of we've talked about how an AR plays out in the Russia episode. We've talked about how an AT plays out in the we're there. Into the mid game, just real briefly, I guess. Those three-way, everybody kills turkey. If you succeed in everybody killing turkey, somebody usually gets stabbed in that. It can be any of the three of you,
right,
that get stabbed, depending on... I mean, obviously you want to be biggest. You want to have gotten a disproportionate share of, you know, I guess there's only four, really, Bulgaria and the three Turkish home centers, but you'd love to get two of them.
Well, yes, sure, but I think for Austria, your mid game starts a little sooner than a lot of other people's. Mm-hmm. Like you're just trying to get through that first initial period, and mm-hmm. at that point, because there's no real sure path to get there. There's some countries where, like there's a two or three like pretty tried and true routes. Austria's kind of, you know, a lot more hit and miss.
Yeah.
So, well, if you can get past that, you know, so we're starting 0-3, right? Your mid game, you need to reassess if you're in a big alliance. And to go back to what we talked about for alliances, sure. We spent a lot of time actually talking about mid-game when all those alliance structures. And go back and see what you've got together. You've got a big three-part alliance, you kind of know what to do next. You've mm-hmm. got like that AT, you know what to do next.
Yeah.
So your mid-game really starts in 03, maybe fall.
Yeah, and you'll reach 6 or 7 or 8 sooner than a lot of people if you're doing well, because of those handy nearby Balkan centers and Italian centers. And
you're going to become a force a lot very quickly.
And it's no, you know, the getting to 8 is no guarantee that you're going to do extremely well in the game. It's just sort of the, okay, I can exhale. I'm at 7 or I'm at 8 now. Now what am I doing next? Right. And that, what am I doing next? I mean, depending on your position and depending on who's left on the board and how they feel about you, it can be obvious. I mean, sometimes that AIR alliance.
Yeah, every once in a while, like stick. The Eastern triple.
And it's not bad for the Austrian, like, because then Italy goes away and Russia goes away. And then you get to start campaigning.
I think it's a little better than the Western triple, where the German just tends to get pushed on the line, and the other two have a lot harder time moving.
Yeah,
I think it doesn't. It's not
any Eastern triple that involves Turkey is probably bad for Austria. But we're talking about the one that doesn't. Yeah. We're talking about the one where you kill Turkey quick, and then you're not so surrounded as Austria. Yeah, so that's not a bad arrangement. Just, you know, or even just one or the other of those guys isn't bad for the mid game either.
Here's one thing I want to talk about, which I think people will point this out if we don't discuss mm-hmm. it. So you're in the mid game, you're doing pretty well, you got like 9 centers. How many fleets have you built?
Oh God, if it was up to me, all of them. I mean, I love to build the Austrian fleets. Usually it means that I probably haven't stabbed Italy in spring 1901, but I probably stabbed him pretty early on.
Yeah.
Because I like to have those fleets, and I probably don't need a second one to attack Turkey.
Right.
Generally. So what it means for me to be getting fleets is it means I got the drop on Italy. Like, I worked with him for a while, and then I got a good stab in on him, and I actually need a second fleet.
Right.
Because then I'm going to be campaigning in Italy, and that's sweet. That just that's a good place to be, because you've killed someone to your east, probably, or at least or badly hurt somebody to your east. And now you can kind of look west and go, okay, hey, Italy's overextended here. Sometimes you do those AI alliances and it ends up that Italy's got like a fleet in Smyrna and an army in Syria and then like a fleet in the Ionian and a fleet in the West Med and an army in Tyrol. Like, he's all over the place, right? Because he's been doing this AI thing, but he's just sort of gone here and there to make the thing work, and he's got a nothing in Venice, Rome, or Naples, and you've got a build or two coming.
Right.
That's when the fleets come out. And hey, if I get a good stab on Italy, and I'm building a couple, then I'd love a third fleet at that point, because now I'm going to sort of be replacing Italy, and yeah. I'm going to need some fleet power. You know, I'm going to need to at least be competitive in the Mediterranean. I mean, I'm never going to be almost never going to be a dominant fleet power.
Right. Yeah, you can't put them out then. And I think the reason I'm bringing it up is it's pretty tempting to never build another fleet.
Yeah.
You should probably, you're not going to do particularly well. You're not going to win.
Well,
if you don't build an extra fleet or two.
I certainly see an Austria that finished with say 10 armies, two fleets.
Yeah. But you're going to need at least one more.
Oh yeah, to get into like a true winning position, end up with three or four.
Yeah,
I think in a solo, I can't think of an Austrian solo I've had that hasn't had three or four fleets.
Just keep in mind that you know it's really tempting to keep pushing those fleets down, but it's pretty quick that they get stuffed, and you can't. You have these extra units that you can't pop and you can't get rid of, and you're like, there's only so much space along that stalemate line, and there's only so much room to push underneath into Iberia.
And they're a chore to get out. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
You build them in Trieste, they've got to go either Adriatic or Albania, and then Ionian. It's a year to get to the Ionian.
Yeah.
And if you're Italy, it's season to get to the Ionian, so it's much easier as Italy. That is the one bad thing I'll say about my sentimental favorite AR alliance is that it is hard to get enough southern fleets to really make it work long term.
I mean, like, it's not as bad as Russia, but it's almost as bad as Russia.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, but an AR, I mean, well, a really long term AR, the Russians shouldn't have a southern fleet at all. But if you're just trying to like make stuff happen with your ally, the Russian, that thing can come out there into the Med and kind of help out. So there's sort of like an extra fleet you can count in your alliance as well, that one southern fleet. Or he might even have two, if he was killing Turkey. That can be dangerous for you in the long term if you're working with a Russian who's got a lot of southern naval presence. That can bode badly for you.
Yeah. You don't really want
playing
that
out the AR alliance a while, if you want to be doing it. You want him, sure, you'll need him in the short term to get down to Turkey to help you take stuff and take stuff himself. But anything he takes down there, you're going to want him to sort of orderly transition over to you in the longer term. Those Turkish units need to belong to you to keep an AR going. Or those Turkish dots, I mean, they need to belong to you to keep it going. You need to just be coaxing him into northern waters. That's the one way to make the AR work. You look bored, man. I could talk about Austria in three hours.
You love it.
We haven't even talked about winning as Austria, but
we're not going to.
You know what? Let's save up for Buffalo.
Oh, what do you say? Buffalo.
Yeah, we gotta.
We still have to talk to him.
We still get to.
Oh, we still get to talk to him.
No, it really is part of have to, isn't it?
No, we still get to talk to him. Actually, he'll be really fun.
Yeah, he will. He's a kind of
a
real recognizable, real well-known person in the face-to-face hobby. He's at a lot of tournaments. He's a great player. He's got a really unique way of looking at the game. I think you guys are really going to enjoy it.
He's fun.
Hope you enjoyed Power Plays. Coming up right after this, Andy Bartolome.
Cool.
Today on Diplomacy Cast, one of the great tournament players of the last decade, a guy who's really a big part of the traveling hobby, somebody who's won a lot. He's a former Grand Prix winner, among other things.
Well, and he's always what's good about him is he is always around. You know, if it's a tournament, it's kind of like you need the blessing.
It's true. He's we all know him well. He makes every tournament more fun. He's always in there mixing it up. Anyway, welcome, Andy Bartoloni, a.k.a. Buffalo. How are you doing tonight?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, definitely.
you almost expect like gunshots and whooping after that kind of introduction. I was really thinking like maybe someone would parachute in at that point. It's like, Andy Bartoloni, woo! So I'm pretty excited about it. So I don't know why you have to look all droopy dog about it there.
But no, I'm happy. I'm happy. Here we go. I'm ready for this.
Well, yeah, it's good because we sort of ended our last segment with Eric accusing me of looking bored, but I wasn't bored. I was really anticipating someone to come in and counter Eric's love of Austria. Oh, and for those of you listening at home, that buzz, that's
also joining us.
Also joining us.
Washington, D.C.
From Washington, D.C. Not really invited, but, you know, we do what we do.
Yeah, we're not sure what's going on with that. But so let's ask Buffalo some questions. What are you saying?
I think we should because, and here's why.
Yeah.
I'm getting. I want someone excited other than you.
Oh,
because okay. I'm really not that as excited as you are about Austria. Andy.
So what's new in your tournament life these days? What have you been to? What are you going to?
I went to Dixie over Memorial Day weekend and ostensibly got absolutely crushed on every board I played on.
Oh yeah.
nice.
Didn't get a lot of help in stopping Doug Moore from soloing.
But
some things are meant to be.
Didn't Doug Moore solo?
In general, I actually haven't played a lot of tournament this year. Just had a lot of things going on, but I plan on being at Husky in July. In August.
Yep.
And if I can figure out a way to do it, I'm going to be in Chicago in September, and
yeah,
cool.
Tempest is in October, and DipCon's in November, and I plan on being at all of them. So
tournament season coming up. You hear that, everybody?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
so funny that we have a fall season.
Yeah,
schedule. It's kind of funny. I think I know. I'm going to try really hard to be at Chicago, so that's going to be exciting. I haven't seen you in a while.
Yeah,
it'll be fun.
Yeah, I mean, and Chicago's got a great location, and it's a great town. So.
Yeah,
they put on a really good show there.
Do you want to
freaking better?
Do you want to talk at all about how every time you come to the West Coast, Nathan and I make it our duty to train new players specifically to ruin your games? Do you feel like
making actually that's it every tournament but WAC. I usually have some unnamed Jake Mannix person who comes in, plays one round, and makes it his personal mission to make me die and not make the top board. Yeah, that would happen.
Yeah. Story checks out.
Yeah, we're based on all of our records. That does.
Apologies to those of you at home. We do like to hear Buffalo complain. It's just part of,
part of the fun.
No, but if you are on the West Coast or agent on the East Coast and can make it to WAC next January, it is an absolutely great time.
It's going to be epic this year, too.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about it.
Seattle, Washington, January something.
Probably third weekend of January.
Third weekend of January.
But we gotta solidify all that up. So what is there any reason you haven't been at tournaments? You've just been busy and you're kind of...
Yeah, this year's been just a very, very busy time for me. I bought a house about 2 years ago.
Oh.
And between that and work and some other obligations, I've just been... I only made it to probably four tournaments last year.
Okay. It's more than me.
Yeah, it's way more. Yeah. It's more than me as well. So it sounds like you've been, you know, but that's cool. So, I mean,
typically I make it to somewhere between 7 and 10.
Wow.
So it's just been, the tournament hobby is just great people to hang out with.
So is that the thing that motivates you the most to shell out the
absolutely
year? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I love to play the game.
Yeah.
And I love to meet new. I love to interact on the boards with new people. But no, the people I've met in the hobby are some of my best friends.
Yeah.
Some of my closest friends.
And they're the perfect people for you to play Austria with, because they sort of, you know, they put on the kid gloves.
Yeah, so
and they definitely, you know, treat you right. Yeah, they don't bum run you.
Yeah.
That's what I really like about tournament players.
So I thought of you for the Austria episode particularly, A, because it feels like you're always Austria.
It does
like,
feel that
every single board I'm ever on with you, or every single board, like I walk over and I'm like, oh, what's going on this board? Oh, Buffalo's Austria. Yeah, that's
it's my favorite country to play.
Yeah, mine too. So good. I'm glad we picked the right country for the right ones. It's okay. What is it about it? Let's start there.
It has every piece of play. You have to, there is no safety to it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to interact with all of your neighbors and even the people on the other side of the board to understand what's going on there, to get a feel for what your three basic neighbors are doing.
Yeah.
If Germany comes for you as Austria in 01,
well,
you're done anyway.
Yeah. Something bad happened at that point. But
it doesn't happen much.
Yeah, we'll stick to mostly
the three neighbors. Once in 10 years.
Yeah.
It's had it happen to me. But I'm a popular guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, wait, how many times have you soloed with Austria? It's got to be a couple, right?
In tournament play?
Yeah.
Like 7 or 8?
Wow.
See, that's what I was thinking.
That's a healthier. Okay, good. Because we're going to want to get into that. But,
Well, we wanted an expert to get into the winning stuff.
Yeah, yeah. The soloing as Austria part is, I mean, I've done it a few times myself, but I don't think I ever remember exactly like what the path is. You know, we started out, like going back to early game. We kind of started out our section when we were talking Austria earlier with discussing our sort of grand unified field theory of Austria being just don't get killed early, like, you know, just do everything you can. It's kind of and I said the reason that I love it so much is it's kind of an adrenaline junkie, kind of a, you know, you drink a cup of coffee and then you just start going and shouting at everybody before spring 1901's even started about how it would be just a terrible nightmare for them to come and attack you.
It epitomizes the phrase, if three come for you, you die.
Yep.
Because there a concerted effort between Russia, Turkey, and Italy moves on Austria in spring of 01, and you can't break one of them off, you're going to die. It may take a long time, depending on the competency of the players, but you're going to die.
Yeah, exactly. Not necessarily true of, say, France.
England, for that matter.
Right, exactly. You can make some good guesses and become too much of a pain in the butt for them to bother taking out. Not true of Austria. You kind of got to sell everybody on something other than doing the easy thing, which is all ganging up and coming and killing you. So where do you go first? I mean, all else being equal, who do you go to and say, hey, come on, don't come kill me. I know it's easier, but let's do this instead.
The first thing you do, at least what I do, is I go to Italy and I say something akin to, if we fight before 1904 or 1905, we're both dead. So right. Why would we want to do that?
Right.
And in general, that is the case. If Italy and Austria fight early, Italy makes it a whole lot easier for Russia. And let me add a codicil to that.
Yeah.
If Russia and Turkey are not at outright war, and Italy and Austria fight early, Austria is likely going to die.
Sure.
Because Russia and Turkey will see blood in the water, and then it's pretty much over with.
Right.
With any sort of competent play.
So then you're going to Italy and saying, hey, instead of doing that, because you're going to be dessert, effectively.
Right. Once they're done with me, they're just going to keep coming.
Right.
And it's nice that you're going to have 6 units, but the Turks by then are going to have 4 fleets and 3 armies. And if England and Germany aren't in Russia's face, they're just going to roll across the middle of the board.
Yep. And then Obviously, if you accomplish that, or at least you feel like you've accomplished that, the next thing to do is usually get Russia on board and say, hey, let's all just go kill Turkey instead, or...
Well, it depends. Well, a lot of it depends on the players.
Yeah.
Who do I think can I keep on side for the longest?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, eventually, you probably don't ever want Turkey behind you long-term.
Yeah.
But sometimes you evaluate who the players are,
mm-hmm.
and figure out who can I make this work with for long enough until I don't need to anymore.
So this is something that I struggle a little bit with when I'm playing Austria. If it does feel like it just makes sense to work with Turkey and go attack Russia when I'm Austria,
okay.
What have I tell Italy to do? Or, you know, what am I trying to push on Italy to do?
Well, if I'm going to go attack, if you're going to go attack Russia,
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things you can do.
Mm-hmm.
If France looks like they're getting attacked by England and Germany, you send them toward France in order to keep the balance,
right?
And not to attack France. To keep the balance.
Right.
You send their armies north at Germany, and you send their fleets around at England, and hope they play nice.
Yep.
Or get tangled up, or whatever. I mean, they can always send a fleet or two toward Turkey as well, just to get it out, just to keep them hemmed in.
Yep.
Yeah, but this is all assuming Italy's your ally.
As Austria, you want... What you want is, if you aren't going to hit it off with Italy immediately, and they're just going to go west, and you're going to split the board that way.
Yeah, that's ideal.
That's ideal.
Yeah,
that doesn't happen.
Right.
Ideal is not a high percentage play normally, though.
Right. Exactly.
You want them to be someone who hems and haws, and it's still at four centers in 1905.
Right. Exactly. That's sort of the best background to an AT, is if you just have sort of an Italy that's either going west or indifferent.
Or can't even figure out what they want to do.
Right. Just back and forth and Tyrolean and Piedmont and spinning their wheels. Right. And yeah. Yeah. I agree.
I mean, it's pretty important as Austria to be on five at the end of 01 and not have a Russian army in Galicia.
Yep.
I mean, to me, those are... If you can achieve those objectives at the end of 01 as Austria, you've done what you need to do to be solid.
Yeah, you've done step one of maybe three steps to having like an Austria that's not terrified of dying.
Correct.
Yeah.
Wow, the three-step program.
Yeah.
Just follow these three easy steps. You're going to do well.
Oh, they're not easy, Nathan.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, that's what it is.
Are you willing to do those sort of like hedgehog type openings if you just have a bad feeling about everyone?
It all depends on the players.
Yeah.
It really does. I can think of two players in the hobby that if they tell me as Russia they're not going to Galicia, I won't go there.
Right.
I mean, and I mean that too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because a Russian army in fall of 01, if there's already a Russian army in Galicia, you have more problems than you care to think about.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's much worse for Austria to have a Russian in Galicia than Russia to have an Austrian in Galicia.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, first, Galicia touches two of your home centers.
Yeah.
Galicia touches one of his that he can defend from, like, three places.
Exactly. Yep. All right, so early game stuff.
Yeah, we don't need to linger too much on early game. I mean, we talked ad nauseum about it. Let's more like, what was your overarching sort of strategy? Let's say you got past your first, like, if you get to follow two and you're feeling pretty good, I mean, what's the next step? I mean, obviously, it'll depend on the alliances, but what are you thinking about as, like, a grand plan at that point?
Well, I mean, to me, fall of 02 is still fairly early, but if you're talking about farther than that, when, say, it's the end of 1904 and you're at you're at 7 or 8.
Okay.
Because you've chosen your next opponent, whether it's Russia or Turkey.
Yep.
And...
Or Italy.
Or Italy, for that, yes.
Yeah.
Or Italy. Or Italy, and... and you're 7 or 8 or maybe even 9 at the end of 1904, I mean, that's where I, at that point is when I'm looking at the board and going, how many more, where can I count to without stopping or seeing any real problem?
Right.
And typically you get to, 12, 13, 14, and you go, and typically you let, sometimes you're going to have to stab somebody for that. Sometimes your alliance is going to do that.
Right.
But if you're at 12 or 13 and you're toward the center of the board, you just, a lot of it's counting. For Austria, you can get to 18 and not have to hold Tunis, Munich, and St. Petersburg.
Right.
You can get to 18 on the east half of the board.
Yeah, and you're 17 plus one of those.
Right.
Oh, well, exactly. Tunis would be one of your 17. But anyway, yeah.
Right.
So I guess that's what I was going to ask, is it when you're at that, 12, 13, and you start counting, how many more is it to 18 from here? How many of your 12 or 13 are likely to be over the line at that point most of the time? Like, couple or a lot?
How many of the 12 or 13 you already have are over the stalemate line?
Yeah, most of the time. I mean, how quick in the...
As Austria, most of the time, at least a couple are.
Yeah.
You probably own Germany.
Okay.
Right. So I guess that's the real question. I think what Eric's kind of not dancing around, but kind of alluding to is, when do you turn on Germany? Because it's going to happen eventually if you're doing well.
In general, unless you have some sort of central powers alliance, and you think you need to get there, you're the stab that gets you from 9 to 12 or 8 to 12 is probably taking German dots.
Okay. Yeah, because I guess I hadn't really given it much thought, but I guess they're really the only ones across the line that are reasonably near. I mean,
correct.
Except maybe Marseille, but...
That's a pain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if part of your 12 is 3 fleets, if you had the opportunity, or 4 fleets, if you had the opportunity to build 4 fleets, you probably aren't working with Turkey.
Yeah. Right.
But which means Turkey's dead, and you've got to figure out how you're going to get the Russian dots that Turkey was going to hold.
Yeah.
Typically in that relationship, you get the Balkans, all of them, and the Russian gets all of Turkey, and he can't really protect it.
Right.
Yeah. So you have to choose. I mean, if you're at 12, and your 12 dots are home Balkans, two Italians and 3 German dots, you're at 12, and you have all of Russia to take. But he's probably. He's probably up against you somewhere, likely in Germany. You may not have gotten all of the German dots.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a... As with almost any position, it may be harder to do because you're so centralized, if you're looking to solo, you want to get your ally... You want to get an ally out of position.
Right.
Or to get an imbalance in place where... Even if you make a big drive on a power that's not your ally, you can collect dots fast enough that they can't take them away from you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I mean, and that can be said of any power, but because Austria is so centralized and you can come at them from so many directions, there's a lot more, in the mid-game, there's a lot more of seal off areas and make them safe.
Right, right.
Eliminate places people can come at you from.
The fleet thing, the fleet thing, it's so hard to be an Austrian naval power. And in a lot of cases, you don't necessarily, in what you just outlined there, you don't really need to be. But the thing is, if you have a long-term ally in Italy or a long-term ally in Turkey, he's going to want to be the fleet guy. Russia's the only one.
And I'm totally okay with that.
Yeah, and you should generally. You should be, because they're going out that way and you're going all over the land without any real opposition.
Right.
So the only time you're even going to really try and be the naval power is if you're trying to, if you're working with Russia long term, and then you can kind of peter out that way. But I guess your point is you can sort of stab Russia once he gets too far west.
The one thing you almost have to do is once you've stabbed, hypothetically, the Turk is your ally, you've taken down Russia, and the Turk has 9 units, and 3 of them are armies, and they're up in Russia somewhere, and 6 of them are fleets.
And they're pushed forward.
Because he owns Tunis and Naples, and you get the picture.
Yeah, then you just have to wait for maybe even one bad turn, basically.
When you stab him.
Yeah.
You almost have to build a second fleet and wave a build to build a third fleet the next year.
Yeah.
Because something has to hold that up.
Yeah, you're just creating a vacuum.
Correct.
Yep. I forgot what I was going to say. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I said vacuum. It described what's going on
between my ears right now. Yeah.
No, I mean, Buff's totally right. You have to. It's all about. Well, if this is what's going on, and you stab that ally who's that huge fleet power, you're going to create this void that immediately people are going to just flow into.
Oh, right. I mean, and how you actually deal with that matters a lot too. Is there a French power on the board that's got 4, 5, 6 fleets? Yeah. And are they just hovering around the boot? Meaning Italy, to you people listening, with fleets aimed at each other.
Yeah, because that guy can lock you up.
Yeah, screw it.
Well, not only can he lock you up, if he's locked up with the Turk at the boot, and you stab the Turk, the first 3 fleets coming off are the ones in Ionian, Adriatic, and Greece.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
or in places that are going to let him flow through. And if the French are in the Ionian, it doesn't matter. You're going to have a problem.
Yeah.
If he can convoy from Spain to Albania, you have a problem.
If he can, he will.
And he should.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I guess I sort of remembered what I was going to say, which is that England, we think of as a fleet power that should use every excuse every time he thinks he can get away with it to build an army. Austria, the reverse is not so true, I guess. Is
correct.
You can get by with a lot of armies. It's not a big deal.
I've soloed with 17 armies on the board as Austria.
Wow. That's kind of awesome, actually. Did you get that?
Actually, I think I did, but I'm not sure.
That's kind of gross.
Yeah. Let's see. What else, Austria? Final thoughts?
Nathan's got one. What's the, and we've kind of touched on it, but I want to try and give our listeners like the unified field theory on Austria from the Buffalo perspective. If you were going to describe what you need to do to be successful or to win as Austria very succinctly, just a few sentences, I mean, what advice would you give?
In the early game, survive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you can talk one person and not attacking you, you're okay.
Right.
In general. If you can talk 2 people and they're not attacking you, you can grow.
Yeah.
And stay balanced. There are times when you're going to need to be, I mean, as with all games, it more matters on the players than it matters on the players and reading the board. But, I mean, as long as you can get steady growth, you can succeed as Austria. Austria, in my opinion, is probably the second hardest country on the board to solo with.
Yeah.
Behind Italy.
Right.
Because if you can't, because if you can't get out of the gate with Italy, you're not soloing with Italy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You said the phrase reading the board, and I think that's something that those of us who play a lot in tournaments, we say that a lot, and that might be an interesting one to get into a little bit.
Understanding not only what's going on with your own position, what's going on with the other positions on the board,
okay,
particularly the other side of the board as Austria. If it looks like that France, Germany, and England are locked in a three-way death struggle where they're alternating being the pivot man.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you a whole lot more latitude than if in the spring of 03, Germany pushed armies into Tyrolia and Bohemia.
Right. That's not so good.
No, it's almost never good when that happens.
Yeah, I don't think that's ever going to be good for Austria.
Yeah,
there's really no scenario.
It either happened because there was a Western Triple, or it happened because they dispatched somebody over there real fast.
Or the German went temporarily insane.
Which happens.
Almost similarly, I mean, does it have to be Tyrolia and Bohemia? It can be Silesia and Prussia.
Right.
If the German is pushing on Russia that fast, unless there's a way that in the East you can clean up scraps, you can take dots or eliminate someone like Turkey if Austria, Italy, and Russia are attacking Turkey. If Germany moves on Russia in spring of 2003, Turkey says hallelujah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
I mean,
go ahead.
I mean, this is key with every power on the board, but particularly if you're playing someone in the middle of the board like Germany or Austria, and in some ways Italy, understanding what's going on in the other theaters on the board, reading the board, understanding from your negotiation with them whether what's going on the board even remotely addresses what they're saying to you.
Right. Right. So, that's a good point. Being a central power, you have to be hypersensitive to that moment when it looks like the other theater is going to resolve, and then somebody's going to try and dive across, because they're probably going to be diving across at you first.
You are probably accurate there.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's a good one. Let's see what else. How about a little bit about tournaments?
Okay.
Yeah, just sort of.
I personally, I am not a person. There are many people out there who play tournament diplomacy that you'll call it gaming the tournament, understanding the scoring system so well that they want to exploit every idiosyncrasy of it.
Okay.
I am the antithesis of that.
Oh, really? Okay.
I do not game tournaments. I have never read the scoring system for WAC.
Well, it changes every year, so why bother?
And it's mostly expressed in the equations and algebra and stuff. You need a degree to read that thing, so
right about that. But I mean, there are some scoring systems that are very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Maletsky's scoring system is ridiculously simple, and understanding it on a simple level of this isn't going to get any better. It's not going to move more than a point or two in one direction. And when you're talking about thousands of points, that likely isn't going to matter. Why should we spend the next 8 hours changing our score by 3 points?
So you mostly like to finish a game when it feels done.
Yes.
Yeah.
I am the only exception to that is especially if you've got a 4-round tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I was told by Mark Franceschini in my second tournament ever that on Friday night the absolute best thing you can do on Friday night is get a decent result.
Yeah.
If you're in draw based system, a solid 3-way draw or better or something mm-hmm. on Friday night
mm-hmm.
and go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Don't stay up. Don't play poker. Don't drink your face off. Don't do any of those things on Friday night.
Right.
Because you really, really will want that sleep and the energy it's going to give you on Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not... although, I hate passing up a solo no matter what. You know.
No. If you can solo on Friday night...
Yeah.
Do it.
But otherwise, take a decent...
On at least a couple of occasions at tournaments, I've gotten to 13 or 14 and didn't think I could get to 18 without being awake as the sun came up.
Yeah.
And then it was still sort of 50-50.
Yeah.
And it's kept me from winning a couple of tournaments.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, I'd still rather have the sleep.
Right.
I can always, after the second round tomorrow night, I can always socialize and be with people and whatnot.
Yeah, you got to pace yourself with those things. As a lot of our listeners probably haven't been to a face-to-face tournament, and they can be a bit of a grind. It's true.
A bit of a grind.
And I cannot stress the importance of eating enough.
Yeah, yeah, seriously.
Particularly breakfast.
Uh-huh. Hydrate. Yeah. Good.
Yes, hydrate. Do all the things you think you might need to do in a triathlon.
Yeah, you might want to do that.
Because you're going to be
bring
talking
snacks.
For 16 hours or whatever it is.
Yeah, bring snacks. Yeah. Eat.
It's very true.
Yes. By 11 o'clock at night on Saturday, beer is no longer food.
Yeah, no, you should not do that. It's probably it's a really bad idea. Yeah, no, but good times. Good times.
No, it's it's great. Yeah. It's always a good time.
Yeah. Good.
You ever do? Just as an aside, because a lot of our listeners are online players. Did you ever do the online? You did do the online things.
I played online.
I used to play.
That's
online.
How I actually found my local hobby.
Good.
I started playing diplomacy when I was about 12.
Yep.
And I played until I was about 20, and then I took 15 years off.
Oh, okay.
Didn't play at all.
Yeah.
Maybe not 15. Something like that,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
But I played online a little bit, and I ran into a guy in a game who used his work address, which was about 700 feet from my apartment.
Oh, wow.
And I just reached out to him, and he said, "Do you play face-to-face?" And I said, "I'd love to play face-to-face," and he drew me into the local group here.
Okay. I actually didn't know that story.
I remember playing with Buffalo Mitt years ago on, like, some random game.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was. I have no idea what happened in it.
And I mean, the online hobby does two things for me. Mm-hmm. I don't have enough time to really play online anymore. Mm-hmm. But when I did, I used No Press Games for tactics.
Yep.
See.
And I would get my results, and I would write my orders then.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
And I gave myself 5 minutes to do it.
Yep. Yep, that's such great. And somebody else mentioned, was it Doug, I think, maybe, said the exact same thing. And it is such terrific advice that I'd never thought about. Just like, just play No Press and literally only allow yourself 5 minutes to write the orders. It's such good practice for face-to-face.
You write them, you send them, you don't change them.
Uh-huh.
And it really does make your thinking on your feet tactics better.
Yep.
Because every once in a while you'll have that game where you only have 2 minutes and you glance at the board and you have to write orders. I mean, everyone has those games.
Mm-hmm. It's a big difference right there. Like that,
it's a huge difference.
Thing a lot, but another sort of effect of the clock thing is it's not just that you can't always talk to everybody you want to talk to as much as you want to talk to them. It's also that you don't have the time to just ponder what the best move is. You have to just come up with
what something. What I would tell any online player that is thinking about playing face-to-face, the single number one skill you need to learn, if you don't already have it, is thinking on your feet.
Yeah.
Because you don't have 20 minutes to look at the map.
Yep.
And you don't have, you're not going to have time to write 15 pages of sonnet to someone to convince them to do what you want them to do.
Mm-hmm. That's the big difference right there. It really is. And it's a different skill set. You know, there's
completely.
People who can out-sonnet me by a mile playing online.
Well,
and
I mean, Eric, I remember in a game once you identified me by my press.
Yeah, I did. That's right. We were playing an anonymous game and I figured out it was you because of all the ellipses. You and your dot, dot, dot. I was like, this has to be Buffalo.
And you were dead on.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, you must have been playing at the...
It was the Vermont group.
The Vermont group.
I don't think
they
do it anymore.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it folded.
Yeah.
But no, we...
That was fun.
But that's what I use my... I mean, you're absolutely right, Eric. It takes a completely different set of skills.
Yeah.
Probably. But, you know, there's some crossover anyway. Is there anything else you do? Any other online stuff? I'm just out of curiosity, aside from the No Press?
Oh, no. I've played press games in the past.
Yep. Yeah.
And I've played in the Diplomacy World Team Championship two or three times.
Yeah.
I thought you said there were two things. You said, but whatever. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Good job, Nathan.
Sorry for making it awkward, everybody.
Way to keep your head in the game there. All right. How about the biggest mistake thing?
Oh, should yes. we do it? Our question. This is our magic question.
Our favorite part of every interview.
This is as clever as we can.
The best mistake you ever made on a... Well, it doesn't have to be a tournament board, but it's slightly
like, what's your biggest mistake that you've made? And that could be a good mistake, could be a bad mistake, but something that sticks out in your mind.
On the same move... For the same game, when I was a younger tournament player, I think it was played in my... I think it was my first Tempest, maybe my second Tempest. Back in, it was early. It was the year Jerry Fest won the
2000
the Grand Prix. 2001.
Wow.
It's somewhere between 2001 and 2003.
Jerry Fest won.
No, 2000.
Not just kidding.
Might be here. Two. Maybe two.
Whatever it was, right. it was Tempest, and in the same game, I got the Golden Blade and the Rusty Blade. Because I got a Golden Blade to get me out to like a really great solo chance, and then I just blew it.
Wow! For those of you listening at home, the Golden Blade is like a best stab award. They sort of poll the tournament and say, "What was the best backstab you saw this whole tournament?" And they hand out a trophy for that. Rusty Blade is basically the opposite. It's the worst stab award. It's the so break it down for us.
I was playing Russia. Mm-hmm. I had England as my toady. And we were, and he was pretty much letting me do whatever I wanted. He was a five center turkey. He was pretty much supporting me. He was doing whatever I asked him to do.
Oh, you said England first. Turkey was your toady?
I'm sorry, Turkey.
Yeah, okay. Gotcha.
And he was a five center turkey, and he was literally doing whatever I wanted him to do. I was at about 12. Sheesh. And I was like, now's the time. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to take these three dots from Turkey, mm-hmm. build, go get three more dots, and I'm done.
Right.
It's all good.
Sure.
He bounced all three of my stabs.
Oh, no.
All three of them. And set himself up in a position where he had me locked in the south. I couldn't get out. Very bad.
Wow. So five-center turkey managed to stay five-center turkey when getting stabbed by you and completely shut down your game.
Correct.
Oof.
So I'm gonna give you a side. See, both of you were in attendance for the other horrible thing that's happened to me.
Okay.
This isn't a mistake of mine.
I know the story.
You know what I'm gonna talk about, Nathan.
Oh God.
People say you've won a Grand Prix. You've won tournaments. This, that, the other thing. Anybody can get crushed in a tournament.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody can. The year I won the Grand Prix, I had a zero score in Portland. I got eliminated four times.
Four boards.
You're welcome.
You're
welcome for that one.
You're welcome.
Okay. So when Portland had DIPCON, mm-hmm. on my third board, I was Russia. After Spring 02 had been read, I owned one center and had no units on the board.
Oh, my God. That's right. I remember this story.
So
it was
any
literally
sort of concerted
them.
Effort on the board can work.
Wow. Eliminated Russia by the end of 02.
Right.
Yeah, that doesn't count as a mistake.
That's not really a mistake. other than attending.
I'm trying to think of mistakes.
That one's
good. Actually, that's not the story I thought that you were going to. I thought you were going to talk about the one center two way.
Oh
no, that will never.
I feel dirty just hearing you say that.
That's going to be covered. Where's the beep button? I want to beep. No,
I wasn't gonna. I wasn't. I'm not gonna tell the story. Doesn't matter. I remember you being on the board.
And it was at that tournament that I don't go to anymore.
Yeah, I went there. Yeah. Anyway.
Moving on. Yeah, we're getting a little inside baseball.
Yeah, inside baseball.
Exactly.
But yeah, Andy, I really appreciate you coming by and coming with some thoughts. Are there any like parting shots? Anything else you want to say?
I'll say this to everybody I know that plays online. If you have the opportunity, there really is nothing like playing face-to-face.
Yeah.
There really isn't. And I would welcome anyone in the online hobby that wants to come out. If there's a tournament near you or something, contact the people running it, come out and play. It really is a fantastic group of people.
Yeah, that's something that I maybe people don't realize if they haven't played very much outside, either online or outside their own little local hobby, is we love the new people. Like, those of us who go to a lot of tournaments, especially if they're new people who are actually good at the game and you know, have sort of built up their own reputation, their own place, that's fun for us because we're sick of the same old good players. Like, we love to bring the new guys in and we'll show you a good time too.
And to give you some idea of the kind of people I've met in the hobby, I'm stealing a quote from another player here, and I stole it when I gave it to a reporter who did an article some years ago.
Yeah. Probably
some years ago. There are several people within the hobby that I would trust with the payoff to the mortgage on my house in cash,
yeah,
to know that it either got to the bank or they weren't alive anymore. But I wouldn't trust them not to go to Belgium.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
Excellent.
Excellent
note to close it on there.
Excellent. Well, thanks for coming by. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's anytime.
Been great, guys, and keep doing this because it really does. I really enjoy listening to it.
Oh, right. I'm glad to hear it.
All right.
Thanks, Buffalo. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Diplomacy Cast. Thanks, everyone, for joining us.
Wasn't it fun?
It was great.
I had a great time.
Yeah, definitely. For Nathan Barnes, I'm Eric Mead, signing off. We'll talk to you next time.
For Eric Mead, I am a giant 13-foot-tall chocolate banana.
I was just trying to sound like a radio guy. That's what I get. Bye, everyone.